This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 337, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you. FanBoy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 337. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And because of last minute emergency, way late, Josh Flanagan, we are joined by the internet's Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
Thanks for stepping in the very last moment, Paul. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We are at FanBoy.com. We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics, or this week, not many comics. One of us picks the best one right around the website, talks about the podcast. And along with other books, topics of interest, things good, voicemails, emails, not the news of the day, certainly.
Feelings?
Just the comics. And before we get to the show, quick reminder, warning, even though we won't be talking about The Walking Dead, there are spoilers. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, do not listen to the show. Pause it. Come back after you read your books. You'll be happier. You'll be less stressed out. You'll be more mellow.
I wish Josh understood that rule with The Walking Dead.
This week, Ron, you had to pick.
Yes, I had to pick the week, and it was a unique week in that it was a fifth week, which also saw a bunch of annuals from DC, which is interesting. I miss the annuals. You know what I mean?
I love annuals.
I miss the coordinated annuals.
Yes, that's where the events used to be.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
People complaining about events, they used to just be in the annuals, so you could avoid them.
Yeah, Atlantis attacks and the
Armageddon 2001, Millennium.
They're doing that with Marvel this year, right?
Asgard
with the Alan Davis stuff, aren't they?
So there's a couple of annuals that Alan Davis is doing across Fantastic Four, Daredevil, and I think Wolverine, where it's like a three-part story. I think they just had Alan Davis do a story, and they're like, well, we'll put it in an annual. I think it was less about let's do a coordinated annual.
Sure.
But who knows? Anyway, going through my stack, there's some books I was excited about, some books I want to see kind of what would happen. And ultimately, this week gave me a good opportunity to talk about America's Got Powers, which is issue number 2, got pick of the week. And America's Got Powers is written by Jonathan Ross with art by Brian Hitch. And I wrote about it on ifanboy.com in the review, and I don't know if I've completely made my point across, but on this book, I was fairly guilty of pigeonholing it when we first talked about the first issue.
You enjoyed it, though.
I enjoyed it. No, I totally enjoyed it. But as I read the second issue, I realized how rough it is and how just, kind of a challenge to the creators it is when you try to compare their book to something. And it's a tough situation because we want to give, especially with new ideas and new books and new properties, you want to give some sort of frame of reference. So with Saga, I was out there saying, yeah, it's Star Wars meets Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
Because that gives you, okay, science fiction, romance, okay, cool, I get it.
You were pitching it.
Pitching it, yeah, exactly. Yeah. We should do less of that. but with America's Got Powers, the kind of the way I was pitching it to people is it's like heroes or rising stars meets like the X Factor or American Idol. And, you know, and what that gives connotations of, it gives connotations of people in the real world getting powers and then there being some sort of reality show component, which that comparison is true. But what's interesting and what I thought of after reading issue two was that two issues in, Ross and Hitch are defying those comparisons. I don't know where this book is going. Like, I didn't expect some of the stuff to happen in this issue. And I don't know. And when I finished this issue, I'm like, oh, wow, I really want to know what's coming. I want to know what happens. And I feel like that's the best kind of accomplishment creators can have going into a book, especially something new like this. Real quick, the premise is that, you know, 17 years ago, some crystal landed in San Francisco. It caused all the women that were pregnant to give birth. And now there's this generation of kids who have powers. And they come back to San Francisco and there's an arena and they fight in a show called America's Got Powers. And it's kind of tapping into the reality world kind of thing, but also tapping into sports and kind of, you know, the public, you know, kind of public arena kind of thing, which is no different than the Romans and the gladiators. And, you know, we've had, you know, our football, you know, idols.
Or Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, exactly. And the first issue ended, and what's interesting is that, so, you know, all these people get powers, and this is a world without superheroes, so that's why it's similar to Heroes and Rising Stars and things like that. But there's also a group of kids who seemingly don't have any powers, and they're just put to work, and our main character works in the gift shop at the arena. You know, because he's lumped in. He was one of these kids that was born, but he doesn't have any powers. And the last issue ends with him ending up in the arena, a huge burst of light, and wipes everybody out and shows that, oh, my God, he's actually got – he's really powerful. But he doesn't know what happened. He doesn't know how he triggered it. The handlers, the government doesn't know what happened either. And this issue really touches upon the fallout of that. And it touches on the fallout of it, and you get some of the reactions of some of the other kids who are, you know, kind of contestants or athletes in the kind of arena, and how they're doubtful of this kid. You get the kid who now went from nothing to, you know, armed guards and getting like a big apartment and like, you know, quickly, you know, kind of, you know, achieving stardom. And they layered in little bits of nuance. Like, they introduced the fact that there's a group of people who are against the fighting for powers. They're abstaining from violence, which is, you know, and they're kind of labeled as a kind of, you know, in a support group kind of thing, but also kind of like freaks, you know, like kind of like, oh, they, you know, they, nobody really understands why they're abstaining from this. And the main character is one of them, because he likes the girl that runs it. So you get little nuances there. But then they also introduced and interesting in the cliffhanger, which this is what pretty much drove the, I don't know where they're going with this. They reveal, they're trying to get the kid Tommy, who had all the powers, to fight in the next battle, and he's abstaining. So his brother was a kid with powers, and he lost in the arena and was killed. And they revealed at the end of this issue, as they bring the kid's mother in, that actually turns out he's not dead. And there's this secret government base and all these pods with all the kids who have died, but the government is studying them because turns out it looks like they quote-unquote died, but they're actually still alive. They're just not awake yet. Like, they're out of it. And the government's trying to figure out why. And so, like, with one issue, and, like, the first issue was double-sized. So, ideally, this is, like, the third issue, you know, technically, if you look at page count. But within how many, 60 pages now of content so far, within this 22-page issue or 24-page issue, they've introduced – each time they have defied what my expectations have been. And like I said, I finished reading this issue, and I'm like, I have no idea where they're going with this, and I want to see what happens. And to me, that's the makings of a good series. That's a good way to grab me.
It sounds very similar to Ecstatics.
Yeah, a little bit, without the tongue-in-cheek.
Right. Well, sure. Obviously, yeah. Totally different completely. But.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I have heard is that the Hitch art is really strong.
The Hitch art is super strong.
I heard it's his best work in a while.
Best work in years. It really harkens back to the old widescreen comics. Do you remember that back in
when the Authority?
When he was on the Authority, pretty much nearly every panel is a rectangle, full page left to right. There are numerous double page spreads that are double page spreads, but they're not double page splash page spreads. They're just they like the top panel spans across all two pages, and then the bottom panels break out into smaller panels. It's like the Hitch of old. Like it is such. And I don't know. Again, we tried to get into the head of these creators. I don't know if he just wasn't interested in what he was doing at Marvel, or he wasn't engaged. But whatever spark that he had back doing the Authority is present here.
That's good.
Except I hate the white borders. I hate the white borders. And I don't know if that's because he's drawing each panel digitally and then just and putting the page together. You know what I mean? I was trying to really understand why those white borders are there. Like, is there a page of original? I should ask Brian Hitch this. Is there a page of original art and he's just putting that space between the panels? Or is he drawing? Because, like, I know, like, David LaFuente used to draw when he was on Ultimate Spider-Man. He drew each individual panel and then digitally pieced together the page.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm. Right? That's why there was no LaFuente original art.
Mm.
So, so I'm wondering if Hitch is doing that and that's why we get such perfect kind of white panel borders. I don't know. Who knows? But it is strong. It is good.
And you're obviously enjoying the story. How about Ross's writing in particular? I mean, is it a big leap over Turf? And
yeah.
I know back when that was coming out that was talking about how there was a lot of words per page and stuff. And is there a marked difference in that now?
There's a huge difference. I don't know if Ross is clicking with Hitch better than he clicked with Tommy Lee Edwards, or if because this is his second go around, but it is a lot lighter on words. Because remember, Turf was just like all these words all over the page. It seems as if Ross is leaning a lot more on Hitch to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cinematic. It's very filmed in terms of both the action and both in terms of the pacing and the way the story is going. I think Ross is really kind of is honing his craft, and now that he gets he's on a second kind of go around with another series, I think it's way less heavy than Turf was.
Cool.
So, but still keeping the big kind of grandiose idea and all that sort of thing. So I don't know. I mean, I know I'm pretty much in the minority a lot. I think like over 250 people pulled it on the site, which is a pretty decent pull, but not many people made it their pick of the week. But for me, it's like I'm really liking the series. It's a 6-issue miniseries, 2 issues in, and I have no idea where it's going, and that's exactly kind of where I want to be.
You make a good case for it. It sounds very interesting. I'm going to probably go back and check out those first 2 issues, so.
At the very least, you've got to really like the position Image is in right now in terms of it seems like they're putting a new book out every week.
And they're diverse. They're totally, totally diverse and totally different. And, so I mean, like that's what I like is like that surprise aspect is that you're getting, and we're going to talk about a couple other books of their books this week. But it's like with each, like with Marvel and DC, you pretty much know what you're getting. Because they're superhero based stuff like that, but with Image, it's just like it's a book about kids with powers in a reality world, and then this other book's about World War II, and this other book's about this, So it's Bloodstrike, it's totally mm-hmm. different than America's Got Powers. So yeah,
yeah, and I mean they've put out diverse books, years past, but I think the thing is that it's this year there's something going on where it's just so consistently good.
Yeah.
Where it's something different, but it's also just, it's great. And like, it seems like, in a way, each book is better than the last. And
yep.
So that's very cool to see.
Yeah, totally. So I dig it. But it's funny. It seems as if I always get the pick of the week whenever a new Batman book comes out. Right?
Batman Annual number one. We talked about the annuals at the top of the show. This is Night of the Owls tie-in tangentially. And really what it does is it establishes Mr. Freeze for the New 52 and Paul and I and Jeff Reed from iFanboy, and even writer Scott Snyder had a little conversation about this on iFanboy.com on Friday if you want to read that analysis of it. But Paul, why don't you tell us a bit about this book?
Yeah, this is this really exciting. I mean, people were asking, I think, on Facebook if, can I read this if I'm just reading Batman or if I'm just reading whatever. You can read this if you haven't read a Batman book, you can pretty much pick this up and I think you'll understand it. And but if it ties into anything, it's Batman and the Night of the Owls and the Court of the Owls storyline from that main book, which you should be reading anyway, because I think it's the best thing DC's putting out. But anyway, this is a slight wrinkle in Mr. Freeze's story. Now, the classic Mr. Freeze story, I think we all agreed, was from the animated series. And
it's the only classic Mr. Freeze story.
It's the only, yeah. I mean, there's been a bunch of Mr. Freeze variations, but that is just, it's the classic one.
Unless you want to count Chill Out.
Count that. You have to.
It's a great Mike Mignola design. Mignola designed that original animated look for the character, but anyways, it's that whole idea that his wife is has some kind of heart condition and she's in cryo freeze, and he's trying to figure out a way to both cure her and then thaw her out so that she can go through the procedure and they can be together again. So it's always had this like kind of there's a bit of nobility to the character, however misguided he is. But what Scott Snyder and James Tynion IV did with this annual is they said that, and here's the spoilers, Mr. Freeze isn't actually married to Nora. Nora is old enough to be his grandmother and is just like the first woman to go into cryostasis or something. Like yeah. And he wrote his thesis on her as a student. And he, over the years, basically became so obsessed with this case that he decided that they're, meant for each other. And he treats her as if she was his wife. And so there's this new little wrinkle in the story that he's kind of deluded. And there's a bit of a back and forth on the site as to whether that's a good change or not. But I think we all decided that you kind of have to make a change to Mr. Freeze because that story's been done already with Nora. And they actually completed that story with the Batman and Mr. Freeze Sub-Zero movie. And they woke Nora up and I think she gets married to her doctor and Mr. Freeze can't be with her. And so
she wouldn't want to be with Mr. Freeze is beyond me. I mean, there's so much to offer a woman. They also really explored the idea that Mr. Freeze is a homicidal maniac and that he's got the classic sort of serial killer upbringing.
He had
a traumatic incident. It manifested as a young age and he ended up killing his mother. And the thing for me, in my point of view, was that Mr. Freeze was always interesting because he's complicated. He's got this sympathetic part to him, but the danger was he became really sympathetic. And so that it makes it difficult to be a villain. And there's always been two sides of Mr. Freeze. There's been the side that wants to save Nora, and then there's been the side of the guy who shows up with a giant gun and wants to freeze everything. And it's hard to reconcile those two different sides. So what they try to do here is reconcile those two different sides and make him a little crazy or a little more crazy than he was before.
Yeah, I like that he says, though, that he's putting on a show sort of for the public. They like his perceived fetishization of ice. So he's like sort of like putting on a front because that's what people want out of their supervillains. And so he's playing up to that. So I like that even though he's deluded and a little bit more psychotic than he was in previous versions, he's still, intelligent and is able to make those kinds of deductions. And
I like the little tuft of hair.
He's got I didn't
love that much. I did like the hot oven brass knuckles that Batman had to punch.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neat.
I read this, and again, it's like I'm always on the edge of Batman, and Connor and I were talking about this when it came out. I thought it was good. I mean, a solid Scott Snyder. I didn't think this was the greatest thing since sliced bread, though. I definitely didn't really jive on the art, on the Jason Fabok art. And while it's interesting and revealing more about Mr. Freeze, it kind of, to me, feels like retconning for the sake of retconning. But I guess there's no continuity now that they started, so I guess you could do that. Now's the time to do it versus, a year ago or in 3 years from now.
I thought it was super solid. I didn't make my pick of the week. I don't even think I made a pick of the week, to be honest with you. I'm glad I didn't.
I would say it's not as good as, the regular monthly Batman series. And Greg Capullo is a tough act to follow. And I would say that the script isn't as good as the regular Batman issues. But I do think it's a solid annual. And then I'm really interested in what's next, because now that Batman has, brought this up and said, she's not really your wife. It's interesting. What does Mr. Freeze do next? Because they could go a bunch of different ways with that. And so I think what's really important is whatever the next appearance of Mr. Freeze is, I'd be interested in what his new ambitions are. If he's still latching on to that or if he's moved on to something else.
Yeah. Well, I imagine he's probably coming, right? They wouldn't do this in the annual if he wasn't coming down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So. The Night of the Owls, it tied in. I mean, they tied it into his technology is what the talent they use for the Talons, and so that made sense. That added a little more layer to what's going on in the books.
He talks about, like, I've been screwed over by bats, I've been screwed over by owls, I'm so damn tired of this city.
True. Cool. So aside from America's Got Powers and the Batman Annual, the other book that was really kind of in the running for me for Pick of the Week was Super Crooks, number 3, from Mark Miller and Lanil Yu. I'm really enjoying this miniseries. I know I've talked about it previously on other podcasts, but each issue comes out, I like it a little more, except that it feels like a cock tease and not in a good way. which I know is
that's been the problem with Mark Miller.
Well, no, yeah, but not in that same kind of Mark Miller kind of way. But maybe it is. Maybe I'm just wrong. But like, it feels like it's missing one more scene. Or like, and like the thing is, it ends on a cliffhanger, and this issue like had some great stuff happen in it, and it was really like, you know, kind of my complaint about issue, you know issue one kind of set up what they were doing, issue two was kind of getting them all together, and now issue three they're starting the plan. It's basically a heist, you know, it's a bunch of supervillains that go to Spain to rob. To do a robbery because there are no superheroes there to stop them. But then the swerve is that the guy, the leader, says they're robbing one of the biggest supervillains ever who retired and has all this money now, and they're going to stick it to him. So like the stakes are that much higher. And it's kind of like, just get on with it. Like just have something happen. And stuff finally did happen in here, but I still left – it left me wanting more, but again, not in a good way. And so maybe you're right, Connor. Maybe that's the problem with Miller. But I'm really liking it. It's some of Lineal Yu's strongest work, I think, ever. Like it looks really good. Yeah.
Well, that's also one of Miller's strengths is he gets really good artists to work with him.
Yeah, and
because his books sell a lot and they get a piece of it, probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, look at the creator owned. Wow, but yeah, no, this is good. And like when this is all done as a story, like when this is collected, and this might be a really good thing to hand to people because it's a fun take. It's like basically, again, to go back to the pigeonholing thing. It's like it reminds me of a little bit of Wanted, you know, or you know, in regards of that, it's, you know, kind of into this world of supervillains and all this kind of stuff. But
I think we should have you pitch every book.
I could pitch every book. I can. Okay. But I don't know. I'm just really liking it. So this is probably the best issue of the run so far. So
FF number they really every issue's the numbers are in different 18. Part of the book. 18 yep. Continues Hickman's one shot stories from the end of his run on Fantastic Four. This is the kids, and in this issue, Johnny takes the kids to the Negative Zone, not Wakanda like the solicitation said. And it was good. I think that Nick Jagoda is a really talented artist who needs to work on being consistent. Because sometimes he's amazing and sometimes not. But although I thought overall he did a really good job with this issue.
I really like him on this, and I think what I think is interesting is the humor level or like the having fun aspect is totally in this book. Mm-hmm. And like compared to Fantastic Four, which I feel like is like up to this point he's balanced the two, but in this like he's turning the fun kind of up in this book and the serious kind of up in the other book. But you know, like because this book makes me laugh. You know, like there's
no, absolutely, yeah. Of course, it's very funny. I think that's really the shocking thing about it.
Yeah, I like Dragota. I mean, like I think I know that there we've talked about the, you know, there are some pages and panels that look fantastic than some others that are like, oh, you know. But I think it works, and this was just totally enjoyable. So
yeah, and I like Professor Johnny.
It's funny. Yeah.
Peter Panzerfaust number 4. Are you guys still on Peter Panzerfaust?
I am. I have it. I fell behind. So I didn't read this issue. I still haven't read issues two or three yet either. So
Paul,
I'm on it. This is a lovely bucolic stop after the hard warfare of the past couple issues. Until the end, and then things go haywire. I think you're having a nice, peaceful sort of break, and then your farmhouse catches on fire. I'm just constantly surprised by this book because it defies what a war comic is supposed to be, without being. And you know, so it's got this, you know, the pigeonholing thing again, like the pitch. It's
do it.
It's Peter Pan, and you know.
Peter Pan, World War II.
Once you think about the pigeonholing thing, it'll drive you crazy.
Right. It's high concept stuff. It's very easy to pitch it, but it's not as easy as all that with this one though, because it's not all one to one analogs of what characters do what in Peter Pan, and you know there's Nazi Captain Hook, you know, but it's still surprising how they integrate some of the Peter Pan ideas and phrases into this book. And it's very much its own story. It's not just those two elements colliding, like, you know, peanut butter and chocolate. It's its own thing.
It's not so heavily dependent on Peter Pan where you're constantly winking at it. I mean, the characters are there, you know, Wendy's there now and Captain Hook is there now, but they're not banging you over the head with it. They didn't even call it Captain Hook's name is German. I don't even remember what it was, but
right.
It's these characters in a different, completely different situation. And yeah, it's clearly Peter Pan, but it's also not Peter Pan at the same time.
So it's just, there's you know, a bit of whimsy to it, but it's like they're not. I mean, Peter's choices, you know, and to get these kids to be, you know, warriors and soldiers, like, it doesn't come without, you know, consequences.
There's real consequence. So I think that's, yeah, there's overall sadness to it too, in the way that it's narrated from the future.
Yeah.
And the guy narrating it is quite sad about it, even though he has happy memories of their time. Clearly this is not going to go well for everyone.
I mean, this issue literally ends in tears.
Right. So I think this book is still wonderful. I love this book.
Yep.
I'm going to catch up, and like, it's going to be one of those things where it's going to be like a Saturday afternoon in the sun with a glass of iced tea, and I'm going to sit down and just catch up on this and know I'll thoroughly enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. You will. And again, it's another Image book that's completely different than every other Image book out there.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Hey, creators and publishers, if you're looking for a way to get your book in front of as many eyes as possible, as easily as possible, and Graphically is the best solution for you to do that. You can upload your book, your comic, your children's book, your sketchbook, your photography book, just about any kind of graphic-based book. Just a few simple steps, you're on your way to getting into the Amazon Kindle store, the Barnes & Noble Nook store, Kobo, and of course the Apple iBook store. There's no need to have readers find a specific app just made for comics or whatever. Just send your readers to the digital bookstore where people go looking for books. And with 29% of all adults now owning tablets and e-reader devices, and sales in 2011 increasing over 300% from the year before, with over 3 million e-books sold, that's a lot of potential customers for your books. You can find a full list of pricing and services at our website. Head over to graphically.com for more details.
Excellent. So Avengers vs. X-Men check-in. Wolverine and the X-Men number 11 continues to be my favorite tie-in with Avengers vs. X-Men, I think purely because it's Wolverine and the X-Men, and it's one of the best books out there right now. And Nick Bradshaw, I would like to marry. He's so good.
I obviously prefer Bocciolo, but I like Bradshaw. But I thought he was inconsistent, and I looked in his because he had three inkers.
Yeah.
And depending on who was inking him, that was depending on how strong the page was. But yeah, Overall, it was you know, another great book. The story is fantastic. Aaron nails these characters, and it's just tons of fun in a way that's not overly serious, but not overly whimsical. It fits right in that sweet spot where I think most comics should live, where it's fun and funny and also, you know, dramatic, and there's action and there's adventure.
And it's touching upon those moments or those plot points that are happening in Avengers vs. X-Men and giving them more depth and giving them more weight. And this particular one goes into Wolverine and, you know, kind of him, you know, mulling over what he needs to do about Hope and his flashing back to his inability to kill Jean when she was Phoenix. And is he going to be able to kill Hope? And is it because she reminds him of Jean, or is it because she's just a kid? And, you know, as well as, you know, like, and it's not just the Wolverine show. You get a little glimpses of the other X-Men. Some great, again, potential of Iceman in the fight with him and Red Hulk, which is, you know, we've talked for years now, I feel like, the potential of Iceman as a character.
Iceman's finally getting his due.
Yeah,
finally.
Which is great, which is totally great. But yeah, I just love it. I wish this book was, like, weekly. You know, like, it's so much fun. Like, for whatever reason, there's some element of fun that Jason Aaron's adding to this book, and I don't know if it's the, you know, the Kid Gladiator interlude in the beginning, or, you know, even in the dire situation and the Phoenix fire and all this sort of stuff, it's still fun to read. Like, it's bright, it's, I don't know, it's really my favorite thing on the stand right now. So
it's not what you think of when you think of Jason Aaron, or yeah, previous to this.
Yeah,
like, yeah, it's just, that's very surprising.
Yeah, totally. So, Powers number 10 came out. I just wonder, I'm going to shit on them for a little bit, so be warned if you're a Powers fan, everyone. But how much longer on the cover can they run? We're back, all new. Like, yes, fuck you. And then basically it ends. it ends with a tidal wave over a city. Again? Like, how many more tidal waves in a city do we have to see, Brian Bendis?
Like, there's a lot of ocean in the world.
The real question is, how much longer are you going to stay in this book?
I'll stay on it. But what was really, really interesting, though, was really interesting, nothing to do with the actual story itself, which is all right, which is typical. But Oeming in the back put a two-page insert in the back of it of his interpretation of Wally Wood's 22 panels that always work.
Mm-hmm. It was
so,
nice.
Yeah, which is for a comic fan or a kind of craft fan. If you know about Wally Wood's 22 panels that always work, it's a great little slice of how comics work. And Oeming does his take on it, does his version of those panels, and it's really kind of cool to see. And he does it in the Powers world with the Powers characters. But yeah, so it's really that almost made the whole, that made me forget about the whole issue, and I was like, oh wow, this is really cool. So,
very cool. I have that up on my cork board. I mean, the original one.
But, do you have the original one?
No,
my
no.
God,
the original one.
I
printed it out and I put it up there. No.
Oh, Jesus, Paul, man.
We almost were going to have a serious conversation after the show was over.
I know, yeah. Can I borrow some money? but yeah, so it was, you know, but the issue was fine. I mean, they're continuing the story on, and I'm not going to drop it. I don't know. You know me. I never drop anything.
Is anyone else reading Superman Family Adventures?
I got it. I didn't read it yet.
I picked it up.
I've gone completely 180. Ron will find this amusing because I totally nailed Tiny Titans when it first came out for being stupid.
Yep.
Okay.
Which got us in trouble for DC.
Yeah, big time.
But by the end of the run, I was totally on board, and I got this and loved the crap out of it.
Yeah.
It's the same creative team as Tiny Titans. So if you're someone who bought Tiny Titans for your family, for your kid, for your niece, or for anyone, or for yourself, it's totally the same vein, just with the Superman family of characters, including Supergirl, Superboy, and Krypto.
Krypto!
And then of course, Lois, Jimmy, and Perry. So it's what you expect. It's giant robots attacking Metropolis, led by Lex Luthor. Superman family has to fight them off, and Jimmy Olsen has to get a cup of coffee for the Chief in the middle of all the madness. So it's perfect.
I'm gonna give it to my niece, but I want to read it first because what I've heard is that it's got more. Because Tiny Titans was like all 3 to 4 page stories.
Oh no, it's a one long.
And
story.
This is even more of a bridge to us adults because it's a more condensed story, right?
Yeah, it's one story.
Awesome. Yeah, but it's very kid friendly, and it's really cute, and but there's some fun stuff in there. Like I like that, like Lex has these three robots, and they spell out Lex. Like one is L, one is E, one is X. And until they reveal that it's Lex Luthor is the bad guy, which is pretty obvious to regular readers, but until then, the robots are always positioned in like a weird order, so it doesn't spell out Lex. So then when they reveal Lex, who looks a lot like Grant Morrison, it actually is L-E-X, so that's kind of cool. And it's cool that like they have like a little like a fan art thing in the back, and they got all the ads for Young Justice and stuff. So this is what they should be doing. This is, if they want to, hook younger readers and get them into all the other stuff that they have for all ages, they've got that all in there. And it's kind of cool to see that there's something for them and for Superman readers who don't want to read what they're doing with Superman in the other books. Because
although he's got the new costume.
He does have the new costume and the collar, and it's
branding, man, branding.
Yeah.
Well, they made that joke at the end of Tiny Titans in which he changed costumes. But the weird thing is Superboy and Supergirl have their old DCU costumes. So.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Who knows, dear listeners?
I like that Perry White is always yelling. He always wants coffee and is always screaming everything. So it's fun. And this kind of sets everything up, and it's like it does all of the Superman tropes and stuff. I'm interested in where they go next and what kind of stories they tell. Exile on the Planet of the Apes, number 3 of 4. Continuation of Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes. It's always weird with the prepositions with this series. Anyways, Gabe Hardman, Karina Bechko, and Mark Laming. It's kind of interesting. There are pages in this book where I had to flip to the beginning and make sure that Gabriel Hardman wasn't drawing like part of this book, because Mark Laming is doing a really good job matching that style. And there's some really beautiful pages in this. And what I love about this book is that I know not a lot of our listeners are huge Planet of the Apes movie series fans, but I'm sure there's some of you out there. What's cool about this is that while all of those classic movies, while I love them, even the weird bad ones, they all like there's a gap between each of them. They're always jumping around in time. Whereas what they're doing with Betrayal and Exile here, they get to tell this longer story and stay with this one set of characters, this one ensemble. And there's apes and humans, and they're introducing more of the apes, like Dr. Milo, who appears in the movies. And it's really cool. They get to tell a more complex story than a lot of the movies are, because they get to establish a kind of continuity here. And they have, this like a big revolution going on. And It's a really good book, and I think whether or not you're into those old movies, I think it's worth checking out if you like great science fiction and great adventure books, and great art too, because both the first mini by Gabe Hartman and this one by Mark Laming are really beautiful looking and consistent to each other. So big thumbs up to this one.
It's funny because it's like I've been fascinated recently with the con. Like, we all have our things. Like, we all have our things we're interested in, and Planet of the Apes is very. I very much loop in with the Doctor Who and the Harry Potter and the blah 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 things that you all like that I don't care about. And what I think is interesting is that I don't mean to say that in any negative way. Like, I think Planet of the Apes is great. I love the concept. I love Heston. I love the masks. I love all the stuff. Well, you know, I think it's great. But like, to hear, you know, I've eavesdropped on Gabe and Karina talking to people at cons about Apes, and it's like listening to myself talk to people about Britpop or 90210 or the Mets, or, you know what I mean? Like I'm fascinated by everybody's, you know, personal interest, but then also, like, when people find out that I don't, like, I'm sure I'm going to get hell from either Suntress or from Gabe himself or somebody for saying I don't like Planet of the Apes, but I'm not passing any judgment.
I think it's very much right place, right time sort of thing. Like, when I was younger, when I was, like, the right age to sort of get this, I mean, these weren't in theaters, but they were running them on, like, AMC. They had, like, marathons or something. And I just happened to catch it at the right time when I wanted, you know, a new science fiction franchise in this crazy new world. And, I mean, the first one, it's a Rod Serling thing. I mean, and you can't – I mean, there's not much better than, you know, a Rod Serling science fiction idea. And
Connor, we have a strong ties to Rod Serling.
We do. Our college, he taught at our college, and his archives are there, including his awards.
I've held his Emmy. I did. I was going up to drop a – no, what was I doing? It was in the dean's office. It wasn't to drop a class. I had to get a signature or something like that. And and one of the secretaries were cleaning out the – remember, Connor, that case, that display case of all the Rod Serling archives? And the glass was open, and they were dusting. And I just walked by. I'm like – can I touch the Emmy? And she's like, yeah, sure, come over. And so I picked up the Emmy.
It's got your fingerprints on it.
And you guys have, you know, G.I. Joe. That's not as much of a touchstone for me, but I have Thundercats, which you guys, I'm sure, don't.
What? So, Thundercats, man.
Oh, I had the characters. Yeah. I mean,
that
I had
was
the
on while
figures.
G.I. Joe was on.
Okay, all right, that's all right.
Yeah.
Thundercats, Silverhawks, Transformers, Mask, all those shows were on at the same time in the 80s. Yeah.
Well, Ninja Turtles is a little bit later, so.
Only by a few years, but yeah, same era.
Okay, all right.
We're off topic.
So it's a right place, right time thing. But I think even if you don't have that touchstone in your past, I think you can enjoy these books because there's great political intrigue and it's gorgeous stuff. So check them out.
Cool. So those are the books that we enjoyed this week. And you enjoyed a lot of other books as well. Go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can see all the books that come out each week and you can do your pull list and come back and rate and review and set your pick of the week. And we want to highlight the picks of the weeks from you, the iFanboy listening on our website and audience. The viewers. Yeah, we know they're not viewers. So the top five picks of the week start off with number six, or actually number 10. The pick of the week, as chosen by me, was America's Got Powers, and it was actually the number 10 pick of the week for the whole iFanboy community with 1.5% of the pick of the weeks, which, you know, was not too bad of a showing. Number five was the Animal Man Annual number one with 5.6% of the pick of the weeks, and we're going to hear a little bit about that in a moment. Number four was the aforementioned Superman Family Adventures number one with 6.7% of the picks of the week.
That is.
Yep. That's great. Well, it's interesting that here we are at number four and we're already in single digits. It's like, must be a Batman book. Number three, also amazing, Angel and Faith number 10 from Dark Horse at 7.6% of the pick of the weeks. Did something happen in that book?
It was a really light week.
Yeah. Number two was The Walking Dead number 98 with 10.2% of the pick of the week, which I heard a lot of people were going crazy over.
That one.
The walk to issue 100 seems like it's
issue 100 hits for San Diego. Excellent timing, Robert Kirkman.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I've heard something about. Remind me.
Involve aliens,
later, Connor. Yes. And the number one pick of the week is Batman Annual number one with 44.7% of the picks of the week. And these are all at the time of recording. By the time you hear this and get to the site, these numbers might have changed, but it gives you an idea that everybody loves Scott Snyder and Batman. So
let's do some user reviews. David Clark reviewed Animal Man Annual number one and gave a story of 4 out of 5 and the art of 4 out of 5. And as Ron said, 5.6% of you made it the pick of the week. And David Clark says, "This does a good job of filling in what amounts to backstory history of the eternal struggle between Rot, Red, and Green. We get to see the current promise of the Animal Man Swamp Thing team-up versus the Rot played out at the end of the 19th century. No real surprises or aha moments here, just quality narrative with great pacing. As for art, I much prefer Travel Foreman. The annual arts felt too shallow, i.e. not much background depth, but the coloring was spot on. The Superhero Holocaust premonition panel at the bottom of page 25 is a real stunner. Took me by surprise and instantly made my mind racing. Took my mind racing about the potential fallout of the Red-Green-Rot War." That is his entire review. And one thing about this annual, that, first of all, it was written by Jeff Lemire. The good thing they're doing is having the regular people do the annual.
Yeah.
Yes.
The cover by Travel Foreman made me sad that we're not going to see the Travel Foreman draw Swamp Thing, because he draws this weird, creepy, sort of translucent Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
It's so cool. Really, yeah.
But the Timothy art, the second green, Timothy art, the second, Timothy Green, the second art, was actually really interesting and kind of did recall Travel Foreman's work on Animal Man.
I think it's very much in the same vein. I like his Swamp Thing a lot. It's like, it's kind of this, I don't know, it reminds me of, speaking of Harry Potter, it reminds me of the werewolves in Harry Potter, because they're like really skinny, and it's just a really weird choice. But and there's a lot of Canadian stuff going on here, Jeff Lemire. A little suspicious. Bringing that into our comics, but yeah, there's like all these Mounties and stuff, but it's a cool team up, and I think it very much fits in with the Travel Foreman style. I actually I like this a lot, and I would be glad to see him on either a Swamp Thing book or an Animal Man book in the future if they so need him.
When the Animal Man of the 1890s, yes, whatever, his eyes started bleeding, I'm like, oh. Yeah, that was awesome. That eye bleeding moment still stands out as one of the best moments.
Calls back to when we first read Animal Man number one in the offices of DC, and we both went, whoa!
Matt D. reviewed Rachel Rising number 8, gave the story a 4 out of 5, the art a 5 out of 5. Pal percentage at this time is 4.6%.
It's the number 6 pick of the week, okay, by the way.
So. I think of Rachel Rising as always being quiet and eerie, but this issue was especially so. Usually there's one or more major acts of violence involved, or at least some extreme insane moments somehow connected to death. But in Rachel Rising number 8, the only real violence lasts for one brief panel, and we never see its results. Other than that, the closest thing is a wordless, inscrutable scene of wolves being guided through eating a corpse by the silent woman who has been a powerful presence since the beginning. Rather than greatly up the ante here, Terry Moore more simply checks in with numerous members of his ever-growing cast, giving each one of them an individualized moment.
And Rachel Rising continues to be, I think, possibly some of Terry Moore's strongest artistic work yet.
The cover is scary as hell.
Yeah, I mean, whether or not, like, I'm not really into the genre. I'm not really into the scary kind of, you know, kind of chilling, you know, it's not horror as much as like a thriller or anything like that. But the book is solid, and it just looks
great.
You
like Twin Peaks, right? I mean, there's kind of a vibe.
I do like Twin Peaks, but but what else did Twin Peaks have that then? And what, and Connor knows this, what got me about Twin Peaks?
The soap opera stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. The relationships Audrey, and the soap opera and all. Well, it was Lyra from Boyle more, I think. But at least when I was in eighth grade.
Have you seen her lately? She's a lot of plastic surgery.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, no, I try not to think about it. Who was it? Cheryl Lee that we said ate, who ate when we were in that cycle?
Oh, was that Sherilyn Fenn?
Like, oh, Sherilyn Fenn, yeah, she aged pretty well. Yeah. But
she's still holding up there.
Anyway. Yeah, but where was I? Oh, Rachel Rising. It's just quality. It's good, and it's tough because reading in issues, because you can tell Terry Moore he's not writing it for the trade. I think he's just writing one long story,
yeah,
and that's just breaking at the end of an issue. And I haven't read the first trade, but I imagine it would feel like the story just abruptly ends. So I don't know how much of that's helping or hurting it, but you know, I know he's on Twitter grousing a lot about the sales and stuff like that. But it's just, if you want good comic books, it's great. And think about this, by the way. Also came out this week was Rassel number 14. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, Jeff Smith says, "Rassel comes to an end with next issue 15. So if you remember back when, all in the same week, when Terry Moore started Echo, Jeff Smith started Rassel, and Dave Sim started Glamorous,
right, okay,
the gods of 90s indie comics. And in that time period, Jeff Smith has done 14 issues of Wrassle and is ending it. And that's it. Dave Sim has done 25 issues of Glamour Puss. Issue 25 came out this week as well, which is awesome. And Terry Moore did 30 issues of Echo and now 8 issues of Rachel Rising. So 38 total issues in that same time period. Isn't that fascinating? I don't know.
He's always been a workhorse in getting those issues out.
Wrassle, yeah. No less awesome, though. That's a great book.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. I'm sad that it's ending. I'm sad that he's kind of. I feel
it's
like
it's also
just
kind of a. I don't want to say referendum on those guys, but it's almost like their era has passed because they're really struggling with their books as opposed to 10, 15 years ago when they were the biggest indie things out there.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a different market. So anyway, all right, cool. So go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can do your pull list and review your books and you'll get it on the show if you write a good review. We're reading all of them, so. So
let's do an email. Patrick from rainy Seattle, Washington says, so I was reading Comic Book Comics and got to the section on R. Crumb. Inspired by this and a couple of beers, I went to Amazon and bought the book of Mr. Natural, The Life and Death of Fritz the Cat, and I nearly got the Book of Genesis. What exactly am I in for?
Well, Patrick, I would keep those beers open because you're in for a ride. Have you guys read R. Crumb?
Only a little.
You're in for some... interesting nipples, some hairy kneecaps.
Well, R. Crumb is immensely important in comics history. And I remember I discovered him in high school. Like, I must have been like a senior or whatever in high school. And it was when I was devouring all comics. And I was at my local library and I just took out every book on comics I could find. And there was some R. Crumb book. And there was the, what the fuck is this? And then that led into, oh, this is underground. Like, you got to understand that. You got to understand the time and the environment. It's underground 60s work. That's what R. Crumb, even though now, even with Book of Genesis, that's his work. That's his arena. And so when you put it in that context, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and he's a giant. I mean, I remember, even though I didn't read the books as a kid, I always knew about Crumb. He was hard.
He's really tall.
His art style is so distinct. Mm-hmm. You see R. Crumb art and you know it. You know, there's no mistaking it for anyone else. He got a really nice chunk of that book, Comic Book Comics, or the Comic Book History Comics. Yeah.
He's important. I mean, he ignited a whole movement or a whole genre of underground comics with an X. That's R. Crumb.
I just finished reading that trade, Ron, and there's a really funny panel that you would appreciate. I don't know if you saw it or not, in the 1986 section where they show Batman. Someone else, maybe Elektra, somebody else, and then Mr. Met doing a chorus line.
Oh, really?
For 1986.
Oh yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Met.
Oh, I love Mr. Met. He's great.
So Patrick, if you're into that kind of thing, you're definitely in for a treat. As Ron said, you might want to keep those beers handy because it's a bit trippy. R. Crumb's
certainly had some issues. It's hard to set expectations. I wouldn't expect to get a lot of it. Plan for tongue in cheek, you know, kind of parody, kind of wackiness. Like it's not very serious, but it's and revel in the art, I would say. So
let us know what you think too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Curious.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love the idea of someone discovering that whole world like that. So it's a good idea.
And you can let us know, and any of you can email in at contact@ifanboy.com, and we'll read your email on the show.
All right, on to our first voicemail. Skip called in. Not sure he has a question though.
Hey, Ron, Connor, and Josh. This is Skip from California. Just wanted to get your thoughts real quick on those rumored zero issues of DC's New 52 in September. Since all the August storylines seem to wrap up with issue 12. Love the podcast, love the work you guys are doing, and keep it up. Thanks. Bye.
Well, Skip, we don't really have any thoughts since they haven't come out yet. But
or officially been announced, right?
They haven't officially been announced, but I can tell you they are definitely happening. they are going to do zero issues in September, and they are going to be look backs at things that happened in the past. So they are not going to, that's what they're going to do. They're going to use the opportunity to fill in some things that have happened before issue one of all these books have started. So
they're not
rebooting. One of the rumors is this is where they're going to reboot back to the old. They're not doing that. they're taking a step backwards, which is what zero issues usually do. So
would you guys pick up any zero issues for books that you're not already reading now?
No.
There's no character that you'd be interested in saying, well, what about looking earlier?
No.
It only depends on if somebody was doing it. Like Alan Moore came on to do Blue Beetle, I'd pick it up. But, you know, it's not really – if I don't like the character already, I'm not buying their book. Or not liking the direction or whatever about the book. So if I'm not buying it already, I think it's the same creative teams. It's just they're doing Zero Issue. So.
Yeah, so it's – yeah, pretty much the ones I'd be most interested in, you know, things like Batman and Animal Man, which I'm already reading. Trying to think of which would be the most interesting. Like Animal Man would be kind of cool because, you know, maybe we'd see, I mean, we've already seen the movie he was in. We had that sort of one shot kind of thing where they talk about acting stint.
Yeah.
But so maybe there's like him as just like a regular superhero, not as much horror based, maybe something. So that'd be kind of cool.
Wasn't he in the Justice League in this universe?
He's at least friendly with them.
Yeah,
like he's like like an extra, you know, he's like me when Josh gets sick, you know, he call me in.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious. I'll read the books that I'm reading and that's it, you know, and I think it's fine. I mean, like it reminds me of stuff they did in the 90s. And, you know, honestly, I like that. Like when Marvel did the -1 issues, I was all over that shit.
You know, I like that stuff too. I like going back and seeing stories that fill in, and you don't always have to move forward. You can stop for a month and go backward.
Yeah. All right. On to our next voicemail, which is a head scratcher.
Hi, boys. This is Russ Tucker in Springfield, Illinois, on Finbar Bad on your forums. I just got finished watching the movie 127 Hours, finally, and I thought, man, that guy's got a lot of willpower to cut off his arm. And I immediately thought, hey, he'd be a good candidate for a Green Lantern ring. And forgive me if you've answered this before in the earlier times, but who would you nominate, be it someone you know personally or a celebrity that has amazing willpower that would be a genuine Green Lantern from Earth? My vote is Aaron Ralston. Plus, he would look kind of cool because he's got no hand. All right. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Well, you bring up 127 Hours. I would say James Franco because he's taking like a million different like graduate courses like at the same time. So that's got to have a lot of, you know, willpower. So
there you go.
I think he'd make a great Green Lantern.
My nomination would be Cal Ripken. Right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, man. You got the willpower. All those games, man. Come on.
That's true.
Connor, who's your real-life Green Lantern?
Real-life Green Lantern? Whoever is dating the girl at the gym who won't shut up. There's this girl at my gym who just talks the whole time. Whoever's dating her really must have a lot of willpower.
Jesus. Wow.
I don't know. That's a tough question. It's a good one, though, and I think he asked if we'd maybe answered it before. I don't think we ever have.
We've ever answered it.
No.
It's a really good question. Who has a lot of willpower? The Nicolas Cage character in SNL.
Just Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
So, all right. On to our last voicemail, which wants some answers.
Hey, this is Randy from Georgia, and I'm listening to the show, and you guys are talking about how many double-dipping things that you do. You get things in issues and hardcovers and trades and all this stuff. How in the hell do you afford all of this? I mean, I'm not asking you necessarily a personal question about, you know, your finances, but, I mean, you know, issues are $4, you know, and then you got trades that are 12, 15, 20 bucks and hardcovers that are 30. I mean, I don't see how you can pay the mortgage and buy all the books that you want to read. So I'd love to just know kind of how you balance all of the entertainment that you guys do and cover and, you know, how you balance that with your wallets. Thanks.
So I've got a job. I don't know about you. Yeah, we work. That helps. It also helps that job is in the comics industry, and so we actually get comps. So like a lot of stuff we get for free.
but I wouldn't even call that most of this. We have a job in comics, so we have to keep up a lot of the stuff if this is part of our job. So it becomes a business expense. So it.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of that cash back at the end of the year.
Hold on to those receipts.
I also buy most, if not all, my trades on Amazon, where they're 40% off. And, you know, I don't have a house with a mortgage. I've got a relatively cheap rent, and I don't have a kid. And, you know, so it's like I have a job that that doesn't pay me a lot of money, but it pays me enough to pay my bills and buy some comics.
It's all the choices that you make. It's all personal. Yeah, I mean, like, these are, you know, there's something, you know, I years ago I had season tickets for the Mets, and now I don't, and so that's one less expense, so I can spend that on an absolute every now and then, you know what I mean? So it's just juggling your, you know, what's important to you. So, but the comps do help.
Paul, we only pay in comics. So
yeah, that's true.
That's how he gets them.
Yeah. All right. So if you've got any questions, you can call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. And I don't mean by saying we get comps, I don't mean to like rub it in. I'm just saying that is a big factor and it's our job. But I recognize that it does cost a lot of money. But you all make your personal choices.
I don't get it. We don't get absolute comps.
We don't.
You know, there's things that, you know.
To be honest, we get a lot of comps of the stuff we don't want to read.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I don't double dip as much as I used to. Like now I've sort of figured out like, oh, I like this first issue, but I know I'm going to want that great collection that's coming out.
Oh yeah, double dip nearly. I mean, I double dip on like classics or like the things I double dip on was like I got the X-Men Inferno on the bus because I wanted a cool, you know, like I have those issues, but it's easier to pull out that book from the hardcover, you know, but I don't know, but Lord knows after moving, I'm not buying any more hardcovers ever again. So. All right, so call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We are a bevy of podcasts. In case you haven't noticed, we have turned on the, I don't know what we've turned on, but
the spigot
of podcasts. So it is just a cavalcade of podcasts. It has been for the past couple of weeks, and it's not going to let up. In addition to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, every week we do the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out that you absolutely cannot miss. And this week, we're delivering you the goods. You get an extra special bonus iFanboy Don't Miss with Mr. Darwin Cook talking about Before Watchmen Minutemen number 1, which comes out this week. Don't Miss is normally a 15-minute podcast. Darwin and I talked for close to an hour, so I hope you enjoy it.
This is one of those books that is coming in just under the radar, so we wanted to make sure you knew as much about it as possible, because there's really no word out there.
So you'll be able to listen to that on iFanboy on Monday, the day after this podcast comes out, as well as you can find it on iTunes. Just search iTunes for iFanboy or Don't Miss, or both iFanboy and Don't Miss, and subscribe to it and download it and listen to it now. In addition to iFanboy Don't Miss, we also, every Wednesday or so, Josh, our compatriot Josh Finnegan, talks to Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience and deliver the Make Comics podcast, where it's all about the craft of not only just making comics, but a lot of the kind of behind-the-scenes business side of comics as well. It's really fascinating to listen to. It's a good, fun listen, and sometimes Josh has other creators on other than Andy, and it's really worth listening to. And it has its own feed now. So we have been publishing it here on the Pick of the Week podcast feed. That's going to end at some point in the next couple weeks, and you're going to want to move over to the dedicated feed. It's linked on the site, as well as you can find it in iTunes. Just search for iFanboy Make Comics. And in addition to that, we talk to creators. We do iFanboy Talk Explode, which usually comes out every Thursday or so, right? About that?
Yeah, it's usually the time.
And recently, this past Thursday, Josh talked to indie creators Chris Schweitzer and Scott Chandler. Yes, I got it.
Okay, I wasn't in the scripts. So I was making sure you had the name.
No, I had it right here in front of me. Right. Chris Weiser and Scott Chandler about their upcoming book from Oni and some other great stuff. So you're definitely going to want to listen to that. That's a lot of fun. And Paul, you've got a Talksplode coming up, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be talking to Greg Rucka about his new prose novel, Alpha, a new Jad Bell franchise, sort of a thriller. And to pigeonhole it, we could say that it's Die Hard in an amusement park. But it also comes with the great technical aspects and military authenticity that Greg Rucka always brings to the table. So we'll talk about that.
Coming today in the mail. Should be arriving in the mailbox.
So very good. Very good. I've read it already. It's great.
Awesome. Cool. So yeah, so you can find that all. You can find that on Thursday at iFanboy.com or right in this feed that you are subscribed to. You should get it automatically. And go back and look in the feed. Josh had a great conversation with Tim Seeley, and there's been other great stuff on there. So always check out what's on
the feed. There's a bunch coming up. There's like three or four lined up in a row. So you can check out all those shows at iFanboy.com, including Ron's Pick of the Week. And by the time you hear this, you'll probably see my Book of the Month review, if not soon after. You can find it at iFanboy.com, including writings from Paul, from me, from Ron, from Josh, from all of our great staff, writers, including all the latest news and reviews. And there was no news this past week. So
dead week.
Dead.
It was just quiet, and we were bored, scrambling for anything. So come back to iFanboy.com for all the news. You can go to iFanboy.com/about for our staff listings. You can see our social network links there. You can also follow Twitter.com/iFanboy and Facebook.com/iFanboy.
Yes, and you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call and leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, have a question in there. If you're calling in, keep it short. Let us know your name, where you're from. It's always great to hear from you.
If you dig what these guys and glasses do each and every week, write them a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about them. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Spread the iFanboy word.
And they should also review your podcast, Paul. Tell us quickly about your podcast.
I would greatly appreciate that. I do Fuzzy Typewriter, and that's with my buddy, Mr. David Acampo. It's about story, storytellers, art, and artists, which gives us license to talk about just about everything, movies, TV, books, comics, things like that. Recently, we've been talking about all the Alien movies. We have a podcast for Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection. The next one's going to be sort of like all the drippings. So that's like Alien versus Predator 1 and 2. We're even going to have Jeff on to talk about the toys and comics and stuff. And then we're going to be talking about Prometheus, which we'll also be doing over here in iFanboy as well. So go check out Fuzzy Typewriter.
Yeah, I'm trying to watch Alien before I watch Prometheus.
I haven't watched any of them in a decade.
Watched the trailer to Prometheus and then watched the trailer to Alien?
No.
Go do that.
Is it the same?
No, but it's not the same, but like the visually and like the that noise, the whom, whom, you know, like whatever. Yeah. Like there's tons of nods back and forth. It's pretty cool. Yeah. So
I haven't watched either movie in a decade, so I need to figure out how I'm going to do that before I pre.
They're good. So. All right, cool. All right. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is like you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.